You're listening to CIUT. It's 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor, the host. With me is Phil Condon, but he's the host of a great show on Wednesday, 6 to 8 p.m., Classical Underground. And we're both on Friday morning.
Friday morning, CIUT Friday morning.
That's the name of the show.
That's the name of the show. CIUT is actually in the name of the show.
If you can't think of the name, right. That's why we call it the Taylor Report. I kind of want you to remember, you know, if we thought of a cute thing, I would forget it. But write to us, by the way, taylor@ciut.fm. Phil, you were going to say something.
Phil, if I could mention to our listeners a website which I see on Facebook, and it's from the Korean Federation of Trade Unions and Korean Confederation of Trade Unions. And again, this hasn't appeared in the newspapers, but there have been demonstrations in the capital city of South Korea, Seoul, of trade union members that are up of 100,000. And the leader of the workers has been in asylum in a Buddhist monastery, and the police went into the monastery and took him out and arrested him. So,
wow.
And that has not...
hundreds of thousands, trade unions.
Yeah, right. And I look at that on Facebook every day, and I check the Toronto Star, but they missed the story again. Surprise.
Yes. Yeah. Well, they missed it when there were 100,000 in Quebec. But as you know, Quebec is just east of Albania. Well,
that's like Korea, well, right?
I think we're joined by Steve Gowans. Are you there, sir?
I am. Hello.
I'm sorry we're a little late getting to you. We've been using Skype today, and it took us a little while. We're getting used to this. This is gowans.wordpress.com, and you've got a very interesting article. And it couldn't be more timely, by the way. All the big meetings are starting to happen again around Syria. And we just spoke to a gentleman who was reporting on the military advances of the Syrian army, now that it has some adequate air support from Russia. And today, the Toronto Star is writing that there's a little gleam of hope because there's been a meeting of the reform group, the Democratic Forces, opposed to Assad, whom they describe as a failure and needs to go. And to them, this is obvious. But you start off by citing a British journalist, name escapes me now, Jonathan Steele. And he said, well, what if the polls were to show, I'm characterizing, that Mr. Assad enjoys support or something of that type? Tell us why what significance you found in both the poll itself and, of course, Mr. Jonathan Steele's comments.
Yeah, Jonathan Steele, the Guardian newspaper in Britain, made this comment in 2012. You know, not too far into the war. And he wrote an article whose title was Most Syrians Back President Assad, But You'd Never Know It, from Western media. And he said, this is really odd because, you know, the view is that Assad has lost legitimacy. That's the point that U.S. President Barack Obama has been making over and over. He has to go because he has no legitimacy. And Steele said, however, the polling data suggests quite otherwise. And you might think that that would be of interest to the media because it was contrary to what's widely believed. But in fact, when they looked at the media in all the Western countries that are calling for Assad to step down, there was no mention of this poll. And it was what he regarded as a reputable mainline or a reputable poll by a mainline polling firm. So I was looking at polling data myself, and I discovered there was an interesting poll conducted in this summer, and it was conducted for a firm that specializes in taking public opinion in conflict situations, and it's working for the U.S. and British government. And one should always ask when they're looking at polling results, who's paying for this? You know, there's not a lot of organizations that have money to pay for polls, and often they're being done by governments or Western governments, if we're looking at polls being done in Syria or Iraq, for example. So I hadn't seen any press coverage of this poll, and perhaps one of the reasons why was because the results were contrary to the positions that have been taken by you know, the U.S. government and the British government and the French government, that Assad has no legitimacy. And what the poll showed was that Assad and his ally, Iran, have more support among Syrians than do the forces arrayed against him, which are supported by the West and the Gulf Arab states. And what the pollsters did is they went through a list of groups and organizations and individuals who have significant roles to play in Syria and asked which of these is having a positive influence or to what degree are they having a positive influence in Syria. And the individual of all the groups and individuals that were examined that came out in the very top was Assad in terms of having a positive influence. Next to him was Iran. So they're judged to have more positive influence in Syria than were the Arab Gulf countries or the Free Syrian Army or al-Nusra or the Syrian Opposition Coalition or ISIS.
Yeah, this is really quite remarkable. We're speaking to Gowans, Stephen Gowans, gowans.wordpress.com, what's left. And it's quite striking that... I think it's clear, both from the Jonathan Steele piece and also the poll you speak of, they're quite aware of those polls. I know they get asked once in a while at White House meetings. Somebody asks if there's – and it's interesting to watch them squirm and talk about something else. But when you put that – there's another issue here. I mean, in that they put so much emphasis on the idea that Assad is – President Assad is the one who has to step down in order everything good things to happen. Yet they haven't been able to produce anything substantial in a way it would demonstrate. In other words, it's quite irrational if you were just looking at it on that level.
And then also invites the question, if Assad stepped down, who would take his place? And would that person or organization have public support? These polls suggest that no, they wouldn't. So this pollster, which is ORB International, also conducted a poll. This was a face-to-face poll, which it did in May of 2014. And it asked Syrians which groups represented their aspirations and interests. Again, Assad came out at the very top. But you look at, you know, some of the groups that are being backed by the Western government. The Free Syrian Army, for example, only 9% said that it represented their aspirations and interests. They had a group called the Genuine Rebels. Of support was only 6%. That's about the National Coalition Transitional Government. Its level of support was 3%.
Yeah.
So, I mean, quite clearly... groups that they're putting forward as being alternative to Assad have very little support in the country.
Yeah, I pointed out to earlier in the show, to today's editorial, I don't know if you saw it, Toronto Star, told about this meeting of the Democratic Forces, of the Genuine Rebels, etc. But they neglected to mention where the meeting was held. I got the impression they didn't really want to say that it was in the Saudi Arabia, the absolute monarchy, where the chief reform individual who gave the final report gave it to the king of Saudi Arabia, who was lying on a couch listening to him.
Yeah. And what was perfectly ludicrous about the entire thing was that they've arrived at their bargaining position, which is Assad must go.
Yeah.
Bargaining position.
Because he's discredited. Absolute monarchies are doing fine. You point out something, though, by the way, that really tells us about that poll, too, and that is that they do represent 2%, 6%, 18% of this, but also it's broken down by areas of the country, which is kind of the dream that you refer to as kind of the ultimate outlook of Western strategy for the region, that is to foster divisions so that they're more easily dominated. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, especially within the Arab world. I mean, I think that the entire thrust of U.S. foreign policy with respect to the Middle East is...
I mean, so that, in other words, they could have a smorgasbord of leaders that they would call Syria.
Well, you know, this is really interesting. There was a proposal that was put forth by John Bolton, who was, if you recall, he was not too long ago the U.S. Ambassador to the U.N. for a period, also an Undersecretary of State. And he's a member of a very influential organization known as the Council on Foreign Relations. And he put forth a proposal at the end of November, which essentially said, he said, today's reality is that Iraq and Syria, as we know them, are gone. Islamic State has carved out a new entity. Defeating ISIS would mean restoring power to Assad, so maybe that's not such a great idea. Mm-hmm. It would also mean returning the territory that ISIS has now to Baghdad's control, which would reinforce Iran's regional influence. So he suggested then that the United States recognize a Sunni state in the territory that ISIS currently controls, which would be consistent with proposals put forth by other U.S. politicians, if for Iraq, for example, to partition Iraq into you know, these ethno-sectarian states.
He kind of let the cat out of the bag, didn't he?
Yeah, exactly. And you know, this is really what U.S. foreign policy is with respect to the Middle East. It's fostering these kinds of divisions and this disunity, because the last thing they want is a coalescence of, you know, Arabs into some single powerful Arab union that's strong enough to take control of its own resources and markets and destiny. You know, if you really want to know why it is that the United States dislikes Syria so much, all you have to do is take a look at the preamble of the Syrian Arab Republic Constitution. And I mean, I think there's some significance in the fact that the country is officially called the Syrian Arab Republic. And if you look at their new constitution from 2012, in the preamble they say, Syria is the beating heart of Arabism.
Wow.
The forefront of confrontation with the Zionist enemy and the bedrock of resistance against colonial hegemony on the Arab world and its capabilities and wealth. And then they go on to say, the goal of the Syrian Arab Republic is to promote the integration and achieve the unity of the Arab nation, which is precisely what the United States and Western countries don't want.
Yeah, that is not a constitution that Mr. Bolton could write.
No.
It's very important. I mean, you laid this out. You also refer to the presence of Israel there and the factor of this is a headache. Division creates division, and has historically for the Arab world. That's an essential part of the colonial operation.
Yeah, because I mean, the Arab world stretches from North Africa to the Gulf, so it has its African section and its Asian section. And whereas Israel's implanted right in the middle of the territory that, you know, in which the Arab nation lives.
Yeah.
And that, I think, you know, the goal of U.S. foreign policy of sowing divisions within the ranks of the Arab nation not only explains why it is that the United States government is opposed to Syria, it also explains why it supports Israel.
Mm-hmm. Yes, this is the little matter of the Golan Heights, which rarely comes up. In any of these discussions, which that's Syria obviously is not going to be part of anybody's discussion if the Golan Heights are not returned to them. It is interesting. We seem to be in a situation, and I guess I should ask you to help us assess the danger, because we have NATO war hawks now have rendezvoused in the skies of Syria at a time when Russia is already there. There are Russian very high-caliber weapons capable of clearing the skies of Syria, apparently. And we're having the government of Turkey, NATO's loudest barking dog at the moment, they are very unhappy at the advance that we're hearing of the Syrian army success. How dangerous is this situation, do you think?
Well, I mean, obviously, it's far more dangerous than it was when
and
we.
I'm not going to play on a scale of 1 to 10, but it's certainly something none of us have seen for quite a while. I mean, maybe the Cuba missile thing, but it's been a while since we've seen this kind of closeness of people who are well armed.
No, that's correct, and unfortunately, the Turks have already shown that they're willing to play a very dangerous game.
Mm-hmm. But then on the other, they would, in their quarters, they must be saying, if this thing doesn't work, there's going to be hell to pay in our camp, right? Because all of them were talking about what they were going to do, and they were organizing new governments, and it worked in Libya, but it doesn't seem to be working here. Having a setback if you're Obama and you say, President Assad, you have to step down and go away because it bothered our great American empire, and he doesn't go away, all eyes are going to turn to the guy who said it, right?
Uh-huh. Well, I do think that the United States has learned something from the catastrophes of Iraq and the catastrophes of Libya, not only catastrophes for their own foreign policy, but we must recognize far larger catastrophes for the people who lived in the region. Mm-hmm. But I think they recognize that, or at least the United States does, that they can't demand that Syria or that Assad step down,
mm-hmm.
or they can't drive him out of the country because, as the polling data have showed, there's really no one to take his place because no one else has any credibility. And there's this great fear that a vacuum will be left and Syria, just like Libya, will descend into chaos and an ungovernable country. So I think the United States is moving much slower with respect to Syria than it did with Libya, trying to avoid the debacle of Libya. But yeah. I think that their strategy is still to try to create a military stalemate where eventually Assad is forced into some kind of arrangement where he has to withdraw.
Mm-hmm.
At least that's their plan.
Well, that's a tall order. Steve Gowans, thank you very much. That's a great article, gowans.wordpress.com. And we look forward to talking to you again soon.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye. This is Taylor Report, CAT 89.5 FM. Write to us, Taylor. At CAAT.FM, Facebook/The Taylor Report. And when I leave out, Taylor-Report.com. And, I want to thank Phil Conlon and Lucas, and we'll see you next week. Sur les uns, sur les deux.